David Lichtenstein, and this week we have with us Rabbi Tzvi Ortner of Zman Technologies. He's also the mechaber of the Sifrei Halacha Machsheves Tzvi. We'll be discussing the Amazon X Echo. This is device, this cylinder device that you put on your table. It connects by Wi-Fi to your home, and it makes, first of all, it could make your entire home into a smart house. And you would say something like, Alexa, turn on the lights, turn on the oven, raise the air conditioning, lower the air conditioning. Or you could say, play Jewish music for me. Order something for me on Amazon. Well, why are we discussing this? Well, what happens if you get an Alexa, you have it in your house, and you know what? The kids aren't singing Shmiras by the Shabbos table. So you go, Alexa, bring some music in, and the next few minutes later, you have Yossel Rosenblatt, or whoever your favorite capella is, singing the Maccabees, singing their favorite songs onto your Shabbos table. What's the halacha of the Amazon Echo on Shabbos? Now, with smart technology, it's going to inundate our home. We're going to have smart refrigerators. There are lights now, light bulbs you put in when you walk in down a hallway. It makes it lighter as you get closer to it, and the ones behind you darken. A lot of hotels are using them. They sense if you're in the room. You have the Nest thermostats that make the heat, air conditioning go up or down. Well, that we can understand is through movement. What about through speech? Is speech also created a Maisa that would be Usher on Shabbos? So, Rabbi Ortner of Zman Technologies is the expert of technology and Shabbos here in America. We'll be discussing it. We will also have Rabbi Mendel Kessin, an international world-famous speaker, and he will be speaking about how to make yeshivas more effective at creating Talmidei Chachamim. He's going to be calling in from Lakewood, New Jersey. You can listen to us Matzah Shabbos from 11 to 12 midnight on WMCA 570 AM or on the Nachum Segal Network, or Monday morning at 11 AM at Nachum Segal Replay. You can find all our shows at headlinesbook.com under the podcast section, or on our headline, or on our hotline at 732-806-8700. You can email questions to us at info@headlinesbook.com, or you can leave messages for us at 806-8700, and we will every now and then play a particular topic or question that interested us. Before we go to our guests, I would like to say something that I think is important, usually from the Parsha. It says that Yosef has two sons, Menashe and Ephraim. It says, Vayikra Yosef Eshem HaBechor Menashe, Ki Nashani Elokim Es Kol Amali Ves Kol Beis Avi. Dradak explained, as do most of the Mefarshim, Hashem has made me forget all the turmoil of my father's home. Nashani is from forget, the Gid Hanasha, right? Nashisi Toiva and Iyev, or that's an Echa Nashisi Toiva. We forgot what it meant, the good life. Ki Nashani Elokim, I forgot my turmoils and pain. And the second son, Vashem Hasheni Kara Ephraim, Ephrani Elokim, I was fruitful, I multiplied, I was successful. So it's interesting. The second name sounds a little more positive. Ephrani, I was successful, and I was able to forget the past. He should have named the first son Ephraim, and the second son Menashe. Which, by the way, you see Yaakov does. Yaakov blesses Ephraim before Menashe, the Chedushim discuss it. Because Ephrani is certainly a more popular, a more, dynamic, entrepreneur, explosive, proactive, as opposed to Nashani. Why does he name the first one, I was able to forget my past, my turmoils, my pain, my anger, my resentment, and then only the second one, and I was successful and multiplied? So it would seem that you can't have, at least in Yosef's eyes, you can't have success if you're carrying a bag of pain on your back. You can't go out and fish. You know that the Hudson River has all these PCBs that were dumped there generations ago by general, it's GE, right? All these contaminants that if you catch a fish in the Hudson River and you eat it, you'll glow in the dark when you go into your next room, right? So what are they requiring GE to do? Clean up those PCPs, get them out of the river before people start eating the fish. So what did Yosef say? Yosef's the most successful person in all of Bereishis, arguably in the whole Torah. And he starts with nothing. He's truly mikimi me afadal me ashpos yaramein, from the pit, from a dungeon in Egypt, to rise to become the vizier, the viceroy of Egypt. He knows something, and he's teaching us something that every successful person knows. You can't move forward. You can't drive if you're looking constantly in the rear view mirror. You can't run a race if you're carrying a pack of resentment, anger about your parents, your siblings, your past partner, your past boss, whoever sold you down the river. Everybody has somebody who was sold down the river by somebody. Well, if you can't get that out, if you can't get that out of your system, if you can't clear up those PCBs, if you're stuck in the past, you won't be successful. Nashani has to be a prelude to Hifrani. And it's not the only place we see it in the Torah. Light is running away from Sodom. Sodom, that black hole of greed, of lust, of hatred of chesed, right? He's running for his life, and the Malach says, "Don't look back, or you will end up in the smoldering cauldron when Kavyachal turns it over." And nobody turns back except for one person, his wife. Vatehin etziv melech. He turns into a pillar of salt. I went with Gershon Kaufman years ago, and he pointed to a certain thing. He says, "That's cool. That everybody says is the pillar of salt. We call that pillar of salt Lot's wife. Still exists by Yam HaMelech, at least according to my tour guide, it does." Why a pillar of salt? She looked back, she became a pillar of salt. Well, think of it. What did they do before they had refrigeration? How did they cure things to last through the winter? They would salt it away. So the Malach said, "Look forward, run away from Sodom. Don't get stuck in the past. Don't look back. Don't adhere to your past." But she does. And how does the Torah commemorate it? She becomes a pillar of salt. The person who's ossified, who's calcified, who's stuck in the past, a pillar of salt. That's Lot's wife. That's what Yosef says. Nashani, let it go. After you let it go, you could have Hifrani. I was speaking to somebody recently. He was really, really angry at his mother-in-law, who really made him tsaras tsuras. She was, and it was decades ago. I told him a story. Did you ever hear of Hiru Onoda? Hiru Onoda was an Imperial Japanese Army intelligence officer who fought in World War II, and he was sent to the Philippines. He was in charge, Lubang Island in the Philippines. He was in charge of intelligence. And before he was sent, he was ordered, "Do everything you can to sabotage the enemy, destroy airstrips, destroy their food supplies, and in no circumstances are you to surrender." What happens? 1945. Post Hiroshima Nagasaki, the Japanese surrender. But what happens? Onoda and the three officers, they're in the jungle, his three soldiers were with him, and they never find out. So he continues his campaign. He's living in the mountains with his three friends, and they're carrying out guerrilla activities. They have shootouts with the police. So what do? The police send pamphlets out, written in Japanese, announcing that they had surrendered in October. But 1945, they pick up the pamphlets. What do they say? They say, "Ah, we don't trust these leaflets. It's a trick by the Allies, by the Americans, to get us to surrender." So they send new pamphlets, this signed by General Yamashita, who actually was in charge of the surrender. They examine them this way, that way. They said, "It's not genuine. It's not true." So what happens? They keep fighting the war. And they're assassinating, this sounds like funny, cows and goats of these poor little villages on this island in the Philippines, that's Vasif and Garnisht, on Lubang Island, some desolate island in the Philippines. And they send loudspeakers out, and they still don't believe it. They keep fighting the war. Now, while they're fighting the war, what's going on? Japan starts exporting cars to the United States. So this guy's fighting a war, and Japan is sending Toyotas. Camry becomes the best-selling car in the United States. The Corolla, Nissan, Lexus, the best partners, the best cars. Anybody who drives a Japanese car, they never break down. Finally, in 1974, like 30 years after the war, some Hevroman from some Japan decides, you know what, I want to find the Abominable Snowman, the Loch Ness Monster, and Hiruzen. Notice he goes to this island and he finds him and he says the war's over and he says I don't believe it. He says, what would make you believe that the war's over? He says, if my commanding officer came here and saluted and told me, Hiru, you're pata, you're free of your service, the war is over, he says, then I would go back. So this guy went back to Japan, he went back to the army, he told them, and they tried to find his commander, and they finally did. It's 30 years after the war. Where did they find him? He's working at a bookstore. He's behind the counter selling books. They say, you know, 30 years ago you had a guy who worked for you. He says, 30 years ago? What? It's like, I have grandchildren since then. Yeah, you must. So they put this guy on a uniform and they get him a sword like he looked 30 years before that. And they bring him to the jungle and he finds this guy and he says, Haru, the war is over. We surrendered. And this guy goes and he gives his sword, and then he goes back to Japan and the Imperial Palace, and he kisses the ground. And he cries in front of the emperor, "I'm sorry, I didn't do my service in the right way." And the guy's looking at him, "Was, dude, this is already." So I told this friend of mine, I said, "You know, I always wanted to meet Haruo Onoda, such a, but now I did. You're Haruo Onoda. I found somebody." His mother-in-law insulted him 30 years ago in a meaningful way. It was truly hurtful, meaning she did very bad things. I said, "You're the modern version of Haruo Onoda." And then I said to myself, "Him? How many other Haruo Onodas do you know? People summing it doesn't have to be 30-year holdout. Something happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and they're just stuck in the past, and they can't move on, and their blood pressure goes up, and they put on weight, and they have Shalom Bayis issues, and children, brothers and siblings don't talk to each other because of some slight that was given 20 years ago or 10 years ago, and parents, children, because of some insult that was made to, you know, a date, a shidduch, a this, an investment, a partner." You figure it out. How many Haruo Onodas? I know so many Haruo Onodas. Sometimes I think maybe we're Japanese. So what does Yosef say? Nashani comes before Hifrani. If you want to be zeicher to Hifrani, if you want to be happy, if you want to be successful in learning, in davening, financially, with your family, Nashani comes first. Don't become like the wife of light. Don't be a pillar of salt, eingesalzen and ossified, calcified, stuck, arthritic in the past. Let it go. Wipe it off. Move it out. Clean up those PCBs. Get them out of your system. Hifrov of Zman Technologies. He's one of the experts of technology and Hilchus Shabbos. Welcome, Rav Ortner.
Shalom Aleichem, Rav David. It's good to be with you again.
So we want to talk about the Amazon Echo. Many people are getting it. It was sold out, I understand, for the year end. You know, all the holidays, which means that you couldn't even get it. It was so popular, and they say that it's going to be in many, many American homes or some version of it. You know, in the near future. And I was asked by one of the people who come to my shir. He says, you know, he bought one, and here are the issues. Number one, can I just ask you to say, play some Shabbos music for me? He says, if you tell it to play music, it immediately starts. You could say, play the name of the say Mordechai Ben David, and it starts playing it, right?
What?
So he says, you could, and additionally, even if you don't say anything, it's constantly listening. So unless you pull the plug out, so the questions are two. Is Amira The Maisa Lagabe Shabbos is speaking called the Meleches Machsheves, an action Lagabe Shabbos. Let me frame this. And question number two is, even if it is an action of turning on electric, being that the electric is already in place and all you're doing is modulating it somewhat, what is the Issa? Because let's say, according to the Chazon Ish, if it's Bain, well, it's not Bain anymore. If it's already the switches, if the circuit has been completed and now you're just playing with it. So is it an action? If it is an action, what Issa would it be? And the last thing is, if you have one, do you have to pull the plug on Shabbos? That's how I would like to frame this conversation. Did I frame it correctly, Rabbi Yotna?
Perfect, David. You put it really into Shalos Chocham Chotzitshuva. So let's try to get to follow your questions and put together the information about it.
Okay, Rabbi Yotna, are you
talking about the Amazon Echo, which actually there's many other devices in the market. Google has Google, and Apple has Siri and whatever, but Amazon Echo is getting much more popular because it's able to communicate with different devices and something else. You can buy an Amazon with that, so it's at least making our conversation a little bit bigger. But in general, the old kind of thing, there's no chiddush over here. Basically, if you're gonna take apart such a device, basically what you have over there, there's a few mics, and there's a recording in the speakers. The only chiddush is it's what is called, at least in Amazon, it's called the AVS, which is the Alexa voice services, which gives you a connection to the internet and a connection actually to Amazon server. So what's happening is the device is listening. So when you are speaking and you're giving out what you call the wake word, let's say Amazon, that is Alexa, so the device is starting to recording what you said, and then it's sending it to the Amazon server and send you back a recording for whatever you ask. If you ask for any songs, a Shabbos song, you're going to send you back a Shabbos song. And then the speakers plays whichever you ask them to do. So the old shyness about speaking to a microphone, the shyness about recording something, and the shyness about playing something on the speaker are not new. The only new thing over here is this connection to the internet and this sending back and forth. So we're going to start to talk about it. We have to divide it between the pe'ula and between the toitzur, meaning, like you said, we need first of all to understand if doing an action, such an action on Shabbos, is considering a ma'isa.
If
Are you
speaking,
doing anything?
If speaking is considered a ma'isa.
Yes, it's number one. And number two, we have to see if this results, meaning that the microphone is listening to you, the machine is recording you, and the speaker is playing what we ask him to play, is a toitzur. Is it a melocha on Shabbos?
Right. So let's go through that. So is speaking a melacha for Shabbos?
Oh, so let's there's another. Let me just point out something which I believe we're not gonna talk about. But there's many other toitzurs, many other results from these machines that involve Isur Shabbos. For example, you can buy an Amazon, which is a shayl of Mekir Memke. You can order a Uber car, which is a shayl of Amir Al-Akim. You could turn on your lights, which is a shayl of Mavir. So we're not going to talk about any other things which could be involved and communicate together with this machine. Let's talk only about to get this machine work, you know, the old fixtures of this machine.
Let me just set something in.
We are talking now about to work with this machine itself, meaning speaking to a microphone and recording something and etc. So the results of speaking to a microphone, okay? Speaking to a microphone is an old conversation. It's very interesting that in the very beginning times, the Menachas Yitzchok is speaking about it, and many other poskim, it was a little bit of a confusion how it works. And the poskim was assuming that there's some sparks and fire involved, so the problem was about nitzoitzim, nitzoitzes, sparks, which is...
Which we know we don't have today.
All right. So then we're getting into the conversation of voltage change, which basically the machine is working. When you're speaking to a microphone, the machine is on. You're just changing the voltage in order to...
Rabbi Yoach, no, but this is the second question.
That's right. Amaisa and Shabbos, we're finding a mouse. Amaisa, we're doing something with our hand, with a fit. That's actually the maisa. Then
right.
Then we have some kind which is considered kelacha yad. We can do things with the hand and the feet, but not kederech, not the usual way you're supposed to do these things.
Okay.
The head of kelacha yad we can find in many ways, and the action and the results. Kelacha yad is a heter on Shabbos. Sometimes it's still also mod rabbonon. Sometimes it's mutar lechatchila. But here we have a interesting thing that we are doing something. Which to you know, blowing like when you're speaking, the waves coming out on your mouth are doing something. So we find in Ilchus Nezikim that you can be mazik someone to mavis bekol. We're finding a series about akimis foso we have a mas or not. But in Shabbos it's very interesting. There's no so specific place where you can point out. If speaking is a mice or not, the only one place that you can see specifically that talking is not really talking but blowing out on your mouth is a mice is in the beginning of Siman Shin Ches talking about to blowing a mukze. If it's considered that you're touching it, it's considered that you moved it. So the Ramo is over there is calling I think a maril, and it says that. It's only not considered moving a mukta because it's tiltel begufoy. So there's the somach roinim getting out from this ramo that if not the heter of tiltel begufoy, which is a specifically heter on ilchas mukta, the fact that you did something to your mouth, to blowing out something on your mouth, and that's moved the chafetz. If not the heter of titel begufo, it's going to be considered your maisa.
But there's a difference between blowing and speaking. Blowing is a direct force, and speaking are sound waves. So the question is, would speaking be considered a maisa? That's our question.
Right. So let's divide it. Meaning, we're not talking now about when you're just speaking and you're walking and you're talking to anyone in your house and this machine is listening. If that's the case, then we're going to get into the famous heter of Shevet Alevi in Chelik Ches, that anything that you're just walking or going around is talking about outside cameras. If you're not doing anything specifically, you're just walking, and the same thing, you're just speaking in your house, it's not going to be considered a mice at all. That's what Rav Ozner is stating over there. But here we are talking about specifically talking to the machine because the machine
right.
has
so
a wake word.
So the question is speaking a maisa. That do we have a raya that's
right.
speaking a maisa? That is the question.
So we don't have a direct raya that's speaking is a maisa. I'm gonna bring you another place where we can see, but we can still be mechalek. So there's nothing very specific talking about speaking as a maisa. So let's get to the next raya. The next raya you can find in the end of Siman Shin Kufres. Simeon Kufres is talking actually about refuah, but there's an interesting sif in the end of the Simeon talking about Meleches Tzedek. It was something.
Darke Bekach, the Lashon Mishneh Berurah of Darke Bekach.
Yeah, so the Lashon Mishneh Berurah. Let's get into it. So the Mechaber is stating over there that
Shekein Derech Hatzaydin. I think that's the Lashon of Shekein Derech Hatzaydin. That's the Lashon of Mishneh Berurah there, no?
This is in Shin Tzayin. We're talking about the Shin Kufres. In Shin Kufres, in the end of
yeah,
Shin
Kufres, Zayin,
talking about...
Says, yeah. By Klavim, yeah, I'm talking about by Klavim, and you're talking in Shin Kufres, Lagabe, Rafu, yeah, okay.
The end of Siman Shin Kufres, you're finding Lechishas Nechoshim. There was something in that time you were able, through wisdom, to make Tzeda, to get somehow the slang into a place, which is called Lechishas Nechoshim. There's a conversation about Darkei Moiri and anything else, but basically you were wisping, and that's the way you made this Meleches Tzedek. So we're getting a little bit more. It's not like you're blowing and pushing something, which is in Siman Shin Ches about Mukta. Here is something you're just wisping, and you're doing Meleches Tzedek. And over there, if you're going to look into the source and into the Rishonim over there, you're going to see that the only heter is because it's not the derech to do it. But once this is the derech to do it, then even just whispering considered a maisa.
But you see, lamaisa, that the gedolei hapoiskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein and others, clearly asir dibur by a microphone, mm-hmm. notwithstanding the lack of a clear raya from Hilchos Shabbos.
Right, definitely. That's what I want. I want to get finished to it. But let me first finish with one more raya, and then we'll get to the opinion of the poskim. There's another very interesting raya. I would say maybe b'deir hagoda. But if you're gonna think about it, one of the very original sources of the Isur from Bishul Nafi and Shabbos is by the sugi of the mon, right? We're saying you're supposed to cook everything before Shabbos, and we all know we grow up with that. And there's a midrash in Sifri that the mon wasn't cooked with any action. It was just a machshava. You were supposed to think to get the meat cooked or baked, and it was done, finished. So just by machshava. So here you see that the Torah prohibit to do it on Shabbos. Even you're just talking about a machshava, you just think about it. So feel something al day shema meforish on Shabbos. There's a There's a shmuis and Shabbos, there's a shmuis and Shabbos, so many, many kind of things, so we're not going to get into it. But I will finish with this that you just mentioned before. I will say most of the poskim talking about a microphone on Shabbos with the 40, 50 years ago, and Moshe Feinstein, Shlomo Zalman, Rav Yashiv, and all of them, they only were oisek in the toitzur. If there's any problem to do this voltage change in the microphone or many other things, but nobody was spending much of pilpulim and time to talk about if this speaking to a microphone is considered a maaser or not. It seems to be that every one of them considered that as a maaser, and I will say one of the better rayas is the Ramon Simen Shen Ches talking about Nefiche Bepeh, which, if not the head of Titel Begufoy, it will be your Maisa. That's my conclusion.
That is this question. Let's assume you never like the Chazanish.
I just want to finish with this, that we must point out that our whole conversation is when you are talking directly to a machine, meaning, in our case, you have to use the wake word of Alexa or something to talk specifically to the machine. Because if you're just going to talk and, have conversation in your house, and let's say in the future, this machine will be able to work for you automatically without any wake word, just like you spoke to your son and something happening, that's going to be a totally different conversation. That's very important to point out, I think.
Okay. So let's go to the last thing. We don't really have enough time to do this justice, but... Let's talk about the next part. So you spoke to the machine, right? But the electric is on. So if you hold its bina, well, where's the binyan if the current is on? If you hold its makaba patish, well, is there a makaba patish if the movement of the electricity moves a little bit? Like, so how would you, and I know this is, again, discussed by microphone, but if you can give us a short answer to that, it would be appreciated.
Yes. Okay, so it's a very old conversation talking about the term and the late poskim is the shinui zerem, voltage change. You have the circle is closed already, and you are just changing voltage and causing many things to happen. So there's a big machlokes in that. There's two tshuvas from Moshe Feinstein, once about a microphone leisu, once about the hearing aids le heter. And the ungenimene pshat in Ramoishi is that speaking to a microphone, you are machaven, so it's a problem. Speaking to airing aids, you're not so machaven, so it's not such a problem. And then you have in Eretz Yisrael, you have Rav Yashir, where choishesh v'isa de reise, based more on the chazonish. Because if it's boine, there is a sugi of moisif al abinyan. you can be mechuyev if you're adding something to a building. So it's still possible, according to the Chazon Ish, to be choishesh to boiner when talking about the water change. Even Reb Shlomo Zalman, b'das haChazon Ish, there's a few steers if Reb Shlomo Zalman were holding b'das haChazon Ish lechumra. But Reb Shlomo Zalman itself, because he considered all sugi of electricity only to be also because of moilid rabbonon, so there's a locha, there's a fair shalocha in Shulchan Aruch that you are able to be moisif reyach. If you put some smell to cloth, you're able to put more smell as long as it's the same smell, not a different smell. So Shlomo Zalman is basically stating that you're allowed to change waters on Shabbos, but it still seems from his truvos from many places in Shmir Shabbos Kilchoso and in Michal Shloimeh that it was more of a heter from Bishas HaTzoyrech, because some kind of a gzeir that people will not understand. What the difference between this and regular usage of electricity? But we need to be very clear about it. Even the Meikilim and Shinui Zerem, it must be a situation of moisif, meaning it has to be something that exists already and you're adding on it. For example, if you're gonna have the voltage on a so low level that you can do nothing with it, and now you're changing the voltage to a level that you can do anything with that, of course it's not going to be a moisif. It's a tosefes meruba leiker. You can be a moisif on something which almost not exists. So even the Talmid of Reb Shlomo Zalman is saying that Reb Shlomo Zalman says you have to get a certain level of voltage that already exists, and then you can go forward. So for example, in Eretz Yisrael, you can have the Tzomet institution. They're doing many things, especially for the military and this kind of things, based on voltage change. They're always making sure that there's going to be a certain level of voltage that you can do with it something, and then you can do a change that's going to be considered just a shinui zerem. So here in our case, in this Amazon Echo, is very interesting, because although we don't have too much information how this device works, you know, I believe it's inside Amazon information. But it was an interesting case, a witness case. I don't know if you heard about it. It just published a few weeks ago that it was a murder story, I think, in Arkansas or somewhere. And in the house where the murder happened, it was a echo machine. So the police request Amazon to give out the information. It was a long court case and whatever, but the end of it, that Amazon gave out publicly that the machine is never recording anything before you saying this wake word of Alexa. Meaning that the machine is only listening. Once you said the word Alexa, then the machine is starting to record. So, Lemaise is brought a very interesting nafkamina. We are now talking about a very interesting thing. You're talking about a circuit which exists, but the circuit, as of now, is only able to listen. Now, when you're saying the word Alexa, the machine is starting to record. So it's a different situation from a logic perspective. We're talking about a voltage change that gets you from one action to a different action. So the poskim we're not talking about yet, but based on the logic that I just explained, I think it wouldn't consider it a shinui zerem, because it's a totally different thing. You move the machine from a listening position to a recording position, which is a different, totally different action. So it's not going to be considered a shinui zerem.
That the rabbi order. So your opinion is the Amazon Alexa would be usur according to everybody.
Lechoyre, yeah.
Well, we're out of time, Rabbi. This is such a fascinating topic, and it's just developing because we're learning more and more about it, such as the litigation that I think we definitely have to do a follow-up on it as we get more and more calls from our audience. But thank you very much for joining us.
Rabbi, thank you very much. I love it. Kol tov.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Kessin Ramchal, Rabbi Mendel Kessin. Welcome, Rabbi Kessin.
Yes, thank you.
So, Rabbi Kessin, I understand that you often speak about why the current yeshiva learning system is not creating the Talmidei Chachamim on par with what we would expect. Can you give us a little bit insight into that?
Sure. But in order to understand really in terms of, first of all, I wanted to thank you for the opportunity for speaking about this. I mean, I think it's a very urgent and very critical topic. Also, really, a full day symposium or a conference really should be devoted to the whole concept of what is happening today in Chinuch, what do Chazal say, what the Gedolim of today say, and the reality, is it working? But I think, therefore, in order to really talk about the problem, I think it would be better to define or at least speak about what is the best way to become a Talmud Chacham. Once we understand the positive, then we can understand to a certain extent the negative, or what I feel is the deviation from that objective or goal. So therefore, I think I'd like to do that first. Once we have that, like I say, then you will fully understand the whole concept of the negative or the deviation and the reason why it's not happening. And also, I want to offer a solution which I think would be really work very well. I think it really can turn around the whole situation. First thing is, what does the Torah really want? What does the Rabbeinu Shalom really want? Well, he wants every Jew to be a Talmud Chacham, minimally. This is really the whole concept of the Avodah, which really is what the Ratzon HaBorei is, what the Rabbeinu Shalom wants. Avodah includes many ideas. The Avodah includes the concept of Limud HaTorah and Yedias HaTorah. It includes the concept of, this by the way comes from the Ramchal Derech Chochma. Yedias Elokus means knowing who God is. Then we have the Limud and the Asiyas HaMitzvahs, to learn mitzvahs and to, of course, practice them. Then we have Tikkun HaMidas, character, to train the character in the correct manner. We have Tefillah and the Kavonus of Tefillah. We even have Kavonus in meditation, which is interesting, which is how the Nevi'im became Nevi'im. Basically, this is the Avodah process. However, I want to dwell on the Limud HaTorah and Yedias HaTorah. How to really become a tremendous Talmud Chacham. But it's all predicated on the Seder of the Limud, what you learn and how you learn. So let's take a look at that first, and then we can understand what the problem in terms of the yeshivas really are. The most important goal of education, in fact, it is the most important, as I said, is that education has to lead to success, hatzlacha. When you are successful, and I will define what that is, then immediately you get what's called a sipuk, or a tremendous emotional satisfaction. That will lead to simcha, and what's even more important is that the simcha that you achieve and you experience will lead to tremendous continuity in learning for your entire life. So therefore, hatzlacha obviously becomes a critical criteria for an entire educational system. The question is, what is Hatzlacha really? What does it consist of? We need a definition. We certainly have to be clear about that. Well, Hatzlacha is really, in terms of learning anyway, Hatzlacha is really mastery or command of whatever you want to learn. In other words, how to really achieve the mastery is critical to the Hatzlacha success. But the question is, what is mastery? What does it mean to be a master or have command of an entire area, the area of Torah education? Well, it basically includes six different goals or objectives. One, clarity. To know very clear what you want, what your objective is, and to achieve that. The depth or profundity. You want to be deep in the knowledge that you've achieved. Comprehensiveness. You want to know a great deal of that information, all the essential ideas and the peripheral ideas. That's breadth or comprehensiveness. Then you have retention, which obviously means you want to recall or certainly have memory of everything. Number five is efficiency. If you can learn the ideas in one day, why would you spend 3 days? Because of the other 2 days, you could be learning something else. And the last idea of mastery is applicability. How do you apply what you know to the real world, to the world of halacha, which is, of course, is the ultimate consequence, of course, of all the limud. These six areas are really what consists, or really is what is contained in mastery. And that is really what you're trying to do. Now, the question is, how do you achieve this mastery? Well, and the idea is, what are the areas of mastery that you have to do in order to achieve these objectives? Because these objectives will give you mastery, and that is the concept of atzlocha, which, of course, is what's going to produce, hopefully, tremendous amount of simcha, and therefore continuity. Well, it divides into two areas. One, the skills that you must employ, and number two, the curriculum that you must learn. What is the content? Let's take a look at the skills itself. The skills itself, there are several that you really have to do well. And to the extent that you lack them, then to that extent you will suffer in some way in the area or the goal of mastery. Let's take a look at what they are. There are really four of them. Obviously, I'm being very brief. You have to forgive me, but I don't have much time to speak about all this and explore the entire area. But like I said, you can easily have a whole conference based on this. In any case, the first skill is called language. You need to have linguistic skills. For instance, if I want to major in Akkadian, which is some ancient civilization, and I want to read their cuneiform writing, I have to know Akkadian. It doesn't make sense to learn Akkadian from the actual script itself. Well, the same thing. Most of Torah, of course, is written in either Hebrew and, of course, Aramaic. How many people really know Hebrew and the whole concept of Aramaic, which really is almost a derivative of the Hebrew? You need to know the grammar and the vocabulary of both of these languages. How do we see this? Because if you take a look, the Rishonim were tremendous experts in this. I mean, Rashi is classic, and then you have the Ibn Ezra, the Ralbag. Most of the Rishonim knew very well and were expert in vocabulary and grammar in Hebrew and Aramaic. Why? Because how can you arrive at the true meaning of something if you really don't know the language? And to the extent that you don't know the language, in many ways you remain a cripple. The next skill that I would say is critical thinking skills. Most people have never really thought about, well, how do I think? Is there a certain plan for thinking? And the answer is logic. There's a whole concept or a whole chokmah called logic, which Ramchal wrote about. Ramchal wrote Sefer Goyim, which is an entire treatise, Sefer, in how to think correctly, how to think with organization. And I will go into a little more of that. And not only Ramchal, the Malbim wrote a whole book on Higoyim or logic. The Rambam wrote, when he was 16 years old, wrote a Sefer called Milas Higoyim. You find many of the Rishonim, some of the Achronim, they were very familiar with the patterns and the skill of thinking itself. For instance, definition. What is a definition? How do you arrive at it? Not only that, when you want to look at a halacha has many derivatives, or rather it has many conceptual distinctions. Attributes, what are they? How do you arrive at that? For instance, let me give you...
Rabbi Kessin, let's go back, though, to the question. What do you think is the problem with the current yeshiva learning system? If you had to break it down into two sentences or three sentences, what is it?
Well, there are many problems, but I think the greatest problem is that there is no preparation for Gemara. There's no database. But let me give you an example. It says in Ovas Reb Nosson, Chochma Begoyim Tamen, that if people tell you that there's tremendous wisdom by the Goyim Chochma Tamen, believe it. Torah begoyim al tamen, because that means the personification itself of the chokhmah itself. What if you take a look at something? It's very interesting. Let's take a look at a classic university. So in some way, they could produce a lawyer in 3 years. They could produce a doctor in seven. They can produce an engineer in five, for instance. But how do they do it? How do they produce people that, in many ways, have to master their profession, get licensed, get a job, and make an income out of that profession? How do they do it in such a short amount of time? When you take a look, it's very difficult to produce a real Talmud Chacham in less than 30 years. The question is why? Why is it that when a guy can go to yeshiva, the average yeshiva guy, I'm not saying everybody, why is it that they can learn there for 20 years, and many of them don't remember much of what they learned? And I'm sure that...
But Rabbi Kessin, is it possible...
Yes.
That the reason why it takes 30 years to create a Talmud Chacham is because A lawyer needs to know a very narrow band. Hi, I do tax law. I do mergers and acquisition. I do corporate law. I do wills and estate. So it's like learning one band of Mishnah Berurah, whereas a Talmud Chacham has to know all of Mishnah Berurah, all of Aruch Chaim, all of Yerideya, all of Chayshim Mishpat, all of Evin Ezer. If he's a real Talmud Chacham, he'll know it with the Rishayim. Lamashal, the Ramah in Resh Mem Beis or Resh Mem Gimel, someplace in that zip code, defines a Talmud Chacham who somebody's Yedeya Lisa Velitin, Beroiv Mekoimus Hashas Im Chuvas Haga'inim. These are, the body of law is probably 30 times, the body of knowledge is 30 times, or maybe 100 times, Rachva Mitzvah Ad Ma'od, is greater than a lawyer, so maybe that's why it takes a lot longer.
Well, let me tell you this. How many people know what you just suggested? That's the question. Why is it a guy can go for years in yeshiva and doesn't know what you're suggesting? That's what I'm saying. But just to return for 1 minute, do you have any idea, even a lawyer who goes 3 years to school, he has to know an enormous amount of law. Now, it's true when he goes to a practice, then he will specialize. That's true. Or take an MD, for instance. An MD itself is a very difficult limud, and that's where most people spend their time. Let me just explain this. If you look at Gemara, Gemara is fundamentally a collection of sugyas. What is a sugya? A sugya is the total treatment that is given over toward the resolution of a problem. Therefore, when Rav Ashi wrote the Gemara, what he did is he wrote in problem-solving formats. This is called a sugya. But a sugya is a very interesting concept. It introduces a problem, it has a treatment process called shaka-vitaria, and then it has a resolution. But if you think about it, the Gemara really deals with what? It really deals with advanced halachic problems. Now, most people coming into Gemara don't have a background. A Gemara is very difficult, if you think about it, because of that. Not only that, but Gemara is fundamentally, in many ways, a notebook. Every third word is missing. Gemara has no punctuations, it has no periods or whatever, and so on and so forth. In order to learn Gemara successfully, you have to be trained in many ways of thinking, debate thinking, legal thinking, because this is all what involves Gemara. In any case, what I'm saying is that Gemara is really a very difficult limud because it deals with advanced halachic problems. So how is it possible that somebody has no background at all
So what
can
would you do
enter?
differently, Rabbi Kasson? What would you do differently?
I will tell you. What I would do is this, and this is spoken about by many of the Chazal, the Gemaras, Rishonim, Achronim. What a person has to do is basically be grounded in what's called the basic core information. That is the Tariag Mitzvahs of the Torah, to know, because if you think about it, the entire Torah, all halachas, are based on the Tariag. The Mishnayos is the details of the Tariag. The Gemara are the problems of the Tariag. And the Shulchan Aruch is the application of the Tariag. So if somebody wants to get into Gemara, which is really an advanced halachic treatment, he's got to know the details and certainly the basis. So I think what's very important, and this has been said by many, many places, Gemara, Chazal, and so on, and even the Gedolim today, is that Mishnayos would give one a tremendous head start, a tremendous background, a tremendous scope of the entire Torah in all its details. And people, they obviously come into Gemara without really knowing Mishnayos, so therefore they are immediately thrown into an advanced halachic text. Now, Gemara is not there to give you yediyos, really. It's there to solve problems. And the maskanos, which become the yediyah, is not even sought after. Most people learn Gemara, and they don't look at the halacha, which is the yediyah itself. The problem also is that the mind does not remember well shaka v'taya. 95% of the Gemara is shaka v'taya. Therefore, most people don't remember that. But the mind does remember facts, information, or yediyos, assuming that it's reviewed and so on. And Mishnayos is that. There are 4,192 Mishnayos, which is of color terakula. In fact, Mishnayos is really 40% of Shas. And therefore, if you look at the fact that each Mishnah, which is an intermediate text, has over 100,000 halachas, because there are ideas that you have to know before you get to the Mishnah, there are ideas that you have to know in the Mishnah, which is very brief, and there are ideas that you have to know after the Mishnah. There's over 100,000 halachas of Mishnayos of Kol HaTorah Kula. The interesting thing about it is it's 40% of Shas, and if a person would learn Mishnayos, four Mishnahs a day, and he would learn it Be'iyun, And Eon does not mean pilpul, but it means many more yediyas, many more rishonim achronim in terms of information. If he learned four Mishnahs a day, he would finish in 3 years. And he would have a massive amount of information. And then if he went into Gemara, it would be a whole different Gemara. He would already know 40% of it. The only thing he would not know, basically, is the 60% of Shach V'Taya and how the Gemara wants him to deduce the problems. But this is critical in any Chochmah that you go into. You need what's called a database. And that could be done through Mishnayos. Mishnayos Be'iyun, I think, would tremendously solve that problem. There could be a two-hour Seder in the yeshiva, but I see that as critical because I think the problem of why people are not really succeeding and therefore going away with knowing Gemara and mastering the Gemara and being able to remember Gemara because they don't have the proper framework in order to put the sugyas of the Gemara into. And Mishnayos gives you that framework. Look, any chokhmah in the world, I don't care what it is, will always give you, for instance, physics 101, 102. Nobody ever starts in graduate school. Gemara is graduate school. It deals with advanced halakhic problems that assumes that you have a massive database. The proof of that, there are many of them. Pirkei Avos, Perek Hei, Mishnah 21, that says, Ben Chomish LeMikra, right, 5 years old for Tanakh, Ben Essen LeMishnah, 10-year-old for Mishnah, and Chamesh Esrei for Gemara. Why? This isn't a segula. This is the sequence of education that is critical. And if you don't do this, then obviously you won't be successful. Let me quote the difficulties.
Rabbi Kessin, if you could wave a magic wand,
yeah,
and say, this is how I believe, I would change the Derech HaLimud the Yeshivas to be 1, 2, and 3. If you could give it to us, what would it be?
Well, again, it depends on the reality now. If children were starting out, let's say 7 or 8 years old, I would teach them Mishnayos, not just 1 year, but, a year or two or three until they grasp the whole concept of halachic thinking, Yediyas HaTorah, and what Torah is really all about in terms of the halacha. And I do it to several siddurim. By the way, I would organize the Mishnayos into the structure, because if you organize the Mishnah itself, each Masechta, into a diagram, to a structure, the mind loves visual information. You can teach them what's called rapid education with enormous speed. But I would do that first. Then I would begin to teach Gemara, okay, of course, but focusing on what I just said. Just teach the Gemara in terms of the mission of that Masechta, unless the person has already learned it. Then just teach Gemara and Rashi and the Rishonim that deal with Pshat. A person has to understand the main idea of Gemara is what's called the mechanics, is the Shach V'Tari itself. Once they do that, then we go back and do the actual Tosfos and the Iyun and begin to think about, well, how do we understand this Kasha and that Kasha and so on. And I certainly would advance the halachas itself, the ideas, because in the end, the mind only remembers the ideas. It doesn't remember Shach V'Taya unless you're willing to chazer it 50 times. The command is not to know the Mishnayos b'shitchias, which is superficial. No, you want to give a child an understanding of Mishnayos with more ideas than just the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is really an intermediary text, and Rebbe wrote that, but it requires an enormous amount of background just to get into a Mishnah. And there are many good sfarim for that, but the key is to know be'iyun, which means many more ideas than
sheep. So this is 1 and 2. What would be the third thing you would do?
Well, the third thing I would do is the rest of the curriculum. Besides Tanakh, Mishnayos, and Gemara, obviously there's a tremendous need for halacha, which is the idea from the sugya, and then the fifth idea, which is critical.
So what would you do differently? What we do today?
No, I would do today what they're doing today. I think the limit of, although I don't know if I would start with the Mishnah Berurah, because the problem is the mind learns in like an onion, it learns in layers. One of the difficulties in Mishnah Berurah, although it's incredible safer, is that there are too many details coming to you at one shot, and the mind doesn't like that. It needs to absorb layers.
So what would you learn? Would you learn Beis Yosef, or would you learn the Shulchan Aruch and Magen Avraham? What would you do?
Okay,
how would you learn
I certainly would not learn the pupil of it, but I think a great idea would be learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch.
with
wherever it deviates, obviously, from the Heintik Halacha, of course, you would learn that. And then there are Shulchan Aruch that deal with what's the Halacha today. The beauty of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is that it gives you the scope, the big picture, the global view of any area of Halacha, and then if you go into the Mishnah Berurah, it's much easier.
You should learn more Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and Yeshiva. And what's your last point? What was the last point you were going to mention?
The last point is what's in many ways alienating an enormous amount of Jews, and that is they do not know Hashkafa. They don't know Hashkafa. The Hashkafa is the divine plan of creation, and when you understand that, it's tremendously mechanzik.
And so how would you learn Hashkafa?
I would learn Hashkafa through the Ramchal. Because what
which
Sfarim
of the Ramchal would you teach?
I would teach Derech Hashem and Das Tfunus. Because those two Sfarim encapsulate the fundamental structure of the entire divine plan. Who is the Baruch Shalom? Why he created the Bria? What is Mitzvahs? Why are there Mitzvahs?
So to sum it up, you would learn a lot more Mishnayos when the kids were young.
Yeah.
Right? You would teach Gemara differently. You would learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and Ramchal.
Correct.
And you think that would create... Fine, but thank you very much for your revolutionary plan.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Have the most amazing series we will be starting. We have six of the most prominent Rabbanim in the world. Who did we get? And only on this show will you ever get, on this program, will you ever get a collection like this. So we have the Zakan Harosh Yeshivas. What we have done is we've taken 10 letters from our listeners that we consider are the most interesting, some are interested, fascinating, somewhat deeply sad letters from our listeners, and we decided to read them and to get the opinion of six of our biggest Rabbanim, Paiskim, Gedalim, depending on who they are, and get their opinions. So we'll have the question and get six opinions. So who did we take? We got the Zkan HaRosh Yeshivas, the great honor in America, Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky, Benon Shel Kedoshim. What a great honor, the Yeshiva Philadelphia. He agreed to help answer these questions. We got Reb David Cohn, who is certainly one of the great Paiskim in the world, to answer many of these. There are some Hashkafa, but a lot of Halacha, right, Reb David Cohn. Then we decided we need a chassidisha. So we looked for the biggest chassidisha paisik in the world, and somebody told us that the predominant chassidisha paisik in Eretz Yisrael today is Rev Mendel Shafran. He's a former gerachassid from Bnei Brak, and he's considered like the biggest chassidisha paisik in the world. We wanted a Sfardi, so we got the son of Rabbi Avadya Yosef, the Rishon Letzion, Mamish, maybe, I don't know, if somebody since Moshe Rabbeinu, another Sfaradishid, who's such hashpa and klalia on the Sfaradish community in the world. So we got his son, the great honor, Reb David Yosef, the head, he's on the Mayetis Gedalia Toira, he's the head of the Sfaradish Moistis in Eretz Yisrael, the Rav of Harnof, etc. And then we wanted somebody from the Eretz Yisrael Yeshiva world. So we got Reb Nissen Kaplan, Rashiv in the Mir. He's erudite. He's brilliant. He has a wonderful sense of humor. He's just fabulous to listen to. And then we wanted to have somebody from the modern Orthodox part of the world. And who did we get? We got Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Yitzchak Elchanan Hagayin. We got Reb Herschel Shechta. Think of that. Tell me, have you ever heard a panel in your life anywhere that encompasses all, you know, parts of Klal Yisrael like this one does? And really fabulous questions. So we hope that next week you will listen to us. I'll give you a taste of some of the questions. What should be given all the tivus to next week? This is David Lichtenstein for Headlines Radio.